If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Sal.
Hey, Henry.
So I'm a supervising producer here at Late Night, and I work on a lot of the show's interviews, including the political interviews.
And I'm the Closer Look supervising writer, so I'm writing about things that Donald Trump says and does all day.
And this is Late Night Cram, where we talk about some of the issues that we don't really have time for in the show.
Yeah. And today we're going to be talking about the impending Mueller report. We're recording this on a Tuesday. It's a day that the Attorney General, William Barr, is testifying in Congress about the Mueller report, in part, and explaining when it's come out. He's saying it's possibly going to come out within the next week. So we are recording this on a day before it comes out. But by the time you hear it, the report might already be
You may
out.
Have the report in yes. your hands.
That's right.
You may
you
have printed a
over it.
400-page PDF.
Mm-hmm. It might be a beautiful Sunday morning. You're out on your patio with a nice coffee, and you're on page 235 of subsection C about the Foreign Agents Registration Act, which I know you're excited to dive deep into.
I mean, that's a summer read.
There,
it may be
right
spring,
there.
But there's your summer read.
You're
right
on
there.
The beach, and you're reading about Michael Cohen and the Trump Tower meeting. And so that might be happening by the time this podcast has come out. We won't be able to talk about the details of the report, but we wanted to get into what we can expect from it and what we should
exactly.
be looking at it and what we've already learned regardless of what is in that report.
So to get some of those answers, we talked to someone who has been reporting on this story since pretty much day one. Her name is Emma Loop. She's a Capitol Hill reporter at BuzzFeed. She's been covering Congress, money and politics, and of course, the Russia investigation.
And the funny thing about this conversation is this is the second
we did
time
it twice.
We've talked to her. We've done
like
this
the
conversation
perfect
twice.
Example of how crazy this era is to be talking about politics. So a few weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, we interviewed Emma to talk about the things I just explained. And during the podcast, we repeatedly joked about how difficult it is to be talking about these issues, knowing that the Mueller report is kind of looming. And all three of us were joking about how we just need to live our lives. We can't be tied down to constantly thinking about and worrying about when the Mueller report will come out.
We can't speculate when it's going to come out.
But,
I mean, by some chance, it might come out within the week of recording that podcast.
Oh, yeah. We repeatedly said, you know, who knows? Given how much we're talking about how we can't be focused on it or know when the report will come out, it will probably come out between recording and air.
We quite literally said, watch, this report's going to come out by the time.
Just laughing at it. And then the Barr.
And our hubris.
Yeah. And then the Barr summary report came out. And
Well, so we called Emma and we said, how about we have another updated conversation
let's
with
do
the
it.
Information that we
She's
have
She's in
now.
New York.
She's, which is great.
We're
we
no longer Skyping
in
D.C. So she comes to New York. And the day we interview her, which is today, which is Tuesday, in the morning, Barr testifies before Congress and says, hey, the full Mueller report will probably be out within a week.
Yes.
Emma was like on her way to the building.
Yeah. So it's very possible, again, as we've said, the Mueller report's going to be out. You will have it by the time this podcast comes out. We don't have it as we're having this conversation right now. We don't know what's in it. But we wanted to talk more generally about what we've learned from the investigation so far, what it's been like for Emma covering it as a reporter.
Totally.
And what we can say is true regardless of what ends up being in the Mueller report.
And if that is not enough of a hard sell to keep listening to this podcast, she's going to tell a story that you probably don't know about revolving a Russian weightlifter and Ivanka Trump.
Yes. It's like Mad Libs for this story.
We've been talking a lot about how this era feels like Mad Libs.
Yes.
And it's just a collection of words together that make a Trump story.
Yeah.
Weightlifter, Ivanka, Russia.
You just need a funny location at the end. Like a weightlifter met Ivanka.
On Mars.
Yes, exactly. In Uranus. Like, you know, it's a real thing that happened. It's very
it's
likely
wild.
To be in the Mueller report because as Emma will explain, it was in court filings. This is a real thing that Mueller's team wrote about in court filings. And so it'll be fascinating to see how that shows up in the Mueller report. We don't know, as we're saying, but you'll get to hear the story. Emma will explain it, among many other things.
Yeah. So without further ado, here's our second conversation with Emma Loop. Hey, we are here with Emma Loop, Capitol Hill reporter at BuzzFeed. Emma, this is the second time we're talking to you. We are now in New York City. We're at 30 Rock. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
You've been covering this story for so long. Where were you when the Barr summary letter came out?
I was driving in my car. I had just picked up my colleague Jason Leopold at the airport, who was coming to D.C. for work, not in anticipation of this all happening. And we were driving back from the airport and our phones just started blowing up. And we were like, oh, my God, this is happening. It had also, right before that, started randomly hailing in D.C. Like, just this massive,
just like a sign from the
a massive hailstorm. Jason gets there. Our phones blow up. He also broke the visor on my car, the passenger visor, kind of accidentally. So it was just like a real storm of activity that day.
And how did the summary kind of square with what you had been reporting for months? What was your kind of reaction to the summary when you read it?
First of all, so nice of you to pick him up from the airport.
We skipped over that.
Yeah, we just skipped. That's a hardcore friend move because not a lot of people will pick up their friends from the airport.
Right.
A lot of people will find excuses.
It's like helping a friend move.
Yeah. I mean, also, like, you get, like, Lyft bonus miles for, like, airport rides, you know?
Yeah, there's
get
a Lyft-Delta connection. Which,
yeah, exactly.
This is not sponsored by Lyft or Delta, but it's just a good thing to know.
To be clear, we are not sponsored by either of these organizations. Solid friend move, so congrats on that.
I need to note that the airport that he flew into was Reagan, which is like 10 minutes from my house.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not a far drive. I enjoy driving.
In New York, if you're going to commit to picking up somebody from like JFK, that is like basically half of your day.
Yeah.
Like,
no, getting I would do there, that.
It's a nightmare.
I would never do it.
Yeah, it's like, honestly, like, you wouldn't even do it for like your closest friend in the world. Like,
why are you qualifying?
Yeah, like, no, you're right. Literally nobody would do it. Yeah.
But so you read the summary. What was your reaction to it?
So I have to clarify, when I picked him up at the airport, that was the Friday when we found out that Mueller was done. And we got the notification from Barr saying Mueller is done the investigation. When I got the letter from Barr to Congress laying out kind of his top line conclusions.
Which is about 2 days. It was Sunday, right?
It was Sunday. I was also in my car. And this is because, we were waiting for this letter to come out and we were living my philosophy, like, let's live our lives. It's a beautiful day in D.C. It was like 65 degrees or something. It was a Sunday. And we're like, this thing could come out at 7 p.m. Let's go to a record store. So again, I was with Jason and we went to a record store. We're hanging out. It's, we're going through all these discount records because the record store is closing. And sure enough, as soon as we got to the record store, we got that 30 to 45 minute warning that the DOJ put out saying this letter is coming. Get ready for it. So I'm like, Jason, we got to go. We got to go. Like, we're like trying to flip through all the albums and get
still
the discount.
Still looking for records.
Yeah, I'm like, you got to get the
I
deals.
That.
Yeah,
we're
like,
I respect that.
Well, we don't want to pass them up.
Yeah.
And so, we're frantically kind of buying these records and old CDs. And then I'm like, come on. So we get in my car.
It's such a funny niche thing to be doing, like, very frantically under a time crunch. It's like,
it's so much physical movement, too, but also you need some dexterity. Yeah.
Like, I was at a comic book store rifling through back issues, doing as fast as I can, trying to find the first appearance of Oracle. And I had to do it in like 5 minutes because Mueller's report was coming out.
All right, you got your Oracle reference in, Sal.
Thank you very much. I've gotten, which is also a company, by the way. Oracle, Delta.
You connect your Oracle account to Lyft.
Connect your Oracle.
Anyway, so we get in my car. I'm racing across town to try to get back to, a workspace so we can kind of go through this. And of course, it comes out while I'm in downtown DC driving in traffic. So I'm kind of in a very unsafe manner at red lights, like trying to read it. Jason's reading it out loud. And it was, it was pretty surprising considering everything that we had reported. And I think that others had reported that, especially on the collusion front, that it didn't go into much detail at all. It just said that Mueller wasn't able to establish it. And so it was a slightly surprising, but it was also, it just left us with more questions. We were like, okay, this is very bare bones. This is not, this does not have a ton in it. It just left us with more questions about what the actual report says.
What should people look for and what will you guys be looking for in this report?
I'm going to be very curious about the collusion aspect, obviously, because that has just been the most high-profile issue. And I think something that I'm looking to see is, there was a quote in the Barr summary, I guess we can call it, because everyone's calling it that, despite his objections. There was a quote about how the Mueller investigation did not establish that the campaign had coordinated with the Russian government to interfere in the election. That sentence itself is not even a complete sentence, the quote. Mm-hmm. You know, there is a portion of the sentence that begins before what is quoted that is not included in the Barr letter. So what does the first part of that sentence say? Does it kind of fit with what the rest of the sentence says? You know, what other kind of information about collusion is contained in the report? Is it a matter of, you know, there were these kind of disturbing incidences from a counterintelligence perspective, but it did not rise to the level of a case of a criminal conspiracy that could be prosecuted? Or was it simply that the Russians did this and, you know, the Trump campaign behaved wonderfully and beautifully throughout all of it? And so I'm going to be looking very carefully at that to see whether there is any sort of evidence of collusion that didn't rise to the level of a criminal conspiracy.
The thing about that letter, as you mentioned, there's that quote, of course. Also, he concedes what is publicly documented and known in that letter, something along the lines of, despite multiple attempts by Russian intelligence to make contact with the campaign. Mm-hmm. He concedes that that happened. Like, yeah. And we all know publicly that that happened, whether it's the Don Jr. meeting, whether it's Manafort's links with Konstantin Kolemnik and all those things.
The weightlifter.
We got to talk
about... Actually, this is a great segue into talking about something that we talked about last time. Mm-hmm. And there are these characters that we don't even have the bandwidth to consume or remember because of so much else has happened.
Yeah.
And you introduced us to one that Henry and I had never heard of before. And we consumed the news pretty,
yeah, pretty, like, I would say
probably more than the average person.
And it's
and
just
we
a
did
story
not know about the story
missed.
And so please tell us about, so there are all
in
these
as much detail as you need, because so, this is really wonderful,
because this is a perfect example of how there are all these documented links we want answers to, and there is this one in particular that is insane that you introduced us to.
And I will just begin by saying this is something that I think will be referenced in the Mueller report.
Yes,
because it is referenced in court filings. There was a court filing that came out after our story was published. I believe it was several months after, that referenced basically the same description that we had given of this contact. It was the same time period. It was a Russian national, et cetera. It all kind of lined up. And so I do think this is something that's going to be referenced in the report. But let me just give the background. So last June, my colleagues, Jason Leopold and Anthony Cormier and I reported a story about how Ivanka Trump had put Michael Cohen in touch with a Russian Olympic weightlifter named Dmitry Klokov to help facilitate the building of a Trump Tower in Moscow. So that is a lot. That is a lot to take in. Like, why is there a weightlifter doing this? This is a great question.
Like, he was going to literally lift the stones and build the Trump Tower himself.
He was going to put Donald Trump on his back and carry him to Moscow to facilitate a meeting. So, yeah, this weightlifter promised, or he tried to set up a meeting between Trump and...
Okay.
That
so
image
funny
is really
to me.
Wonderful.
Just the idea that, like, they're like, we found a strong guy who can literally...
Well, like, found a Russian strongman.
Yeah, we found a Russian like strongman. He'll carry you to Moscow. He'll build the tower himself. Yeah.
So, I mean, just as a sidebar, I kind of find this fascinating, and this is something you see with several athletes, high-profile athletes in Russia, you know, whether it's the captain of the Washington Capitals in Washington or other kind of Russian athletes. There are these famous Russian athletes who kind of get roped into the politics of the country, whether, you know, because they believe in it or for other reasons, we don't really know. But this guy who's got an Olympic medal got involved in this somehow. We're still not sure how, but basically his wife, the weightlifter's wife, sent a message to Ivanka, and Ivanka put the weightlifter and his wife in touch with Michael Cohen, who had some discussions with the weightlifter, but ultimately kind of broke off discussions. And this correspondence, this situation was being reviewed by congressional investigators. It was being scrutinized by Robert Mueller's team as well. As, you know, an example, I think, of one of these other attempts to contact people within the Trump orbit during the campaign. This happened in late 2015. So November 2015. And we reported this. And like I said, it is kind of mentioned and referenced in court filings afterwards.
It's just so bizarre. I mean, I think the one of many things that I'm interested to see the Mueller report answer is these guys lied so consistently so many times about so many details of what happened that were then later verified. The Trump Tower Moscow deal is a perfect example of how often they lied about the timeline, about all the people involved, and they lied so often. And so the question is, why did they lie? What were they covering up? It's obviously possible that the answer is just that they're serial liars who lie about everything, even when there's no reason to lie. But the Mueller report, at least theoretically, is supposed to answer, okay, they were lying for all of these reasons. Here's why they lied. So that's a perfect example. The Trump Tower Moscow deal is a perfect example of they lied so many times about their contacts with Russians in building it, about whether Trump himself was involved, whether there was a deal letter, how long the negotiations happened. They lied about all of those details. And that's one of the big things that I want to see the Mueller report answer is, like, so why were they lying? Like, what was at the heart of this thing that caused them to lie so much about it? Is it literally just because they just felt like lying? It was embarrassing to them? Or was there something else that we don't know about that Mueller knows about?
Right. And I think there's perhaps a distinction that Mueller will draw between them lying because it simply wouldn't have looked good from a political optics standpoint to go out in front of a crowd of, you know, voters in the Midwest who are looking for someone to fight on their behalf and say, yeah, you know, I'm running for president, but I'm also trying to do this massive business deal with the Russians behind the scenes. You know, they might have thought, you know, maybe this guy isn't really in it for us. Yeah. You know what I mean? Maybe he's not as committed as he says he is to, you know, turning our country around. Or was this truly concealed because there was something more nefarious going on? We certainly don't have the answer to that at this point, but maybe Mueller will shed some light on that.
I'm curious, as a Capitol Hill reporter, after this Barr summary came out, what was it like being on the Hill? What was it like talking to Democrats about this, Republicans? I feel like you posted a video of, like, Kushner just straight up, like, jogging away from reporters after he'd been in this meeting. Like, what was the vibe like when you were there?
You know, the first week, I actually thought it was surprisingly quiet. And I did get the sense that Democrats were not particularly eager to talk because, obviously, they were getting beat up pretty hard by Republicans who were saying, well, here is the conclusion. And the conclusion is that he didn't collude and that ultimately he didn't obstruct justice. So let's all move on. And all of your investigations that you've just relaunched in the House are a bad idea and you should end them. And so I don't think Democrats were particularly excited to talk to any press at that point. I had some trouble finding people that, you know, typically wouldn't be as difficult to find. So I don't think they were particularly eager to talk. The Kushner thing was like kind of totally... That was as part of the Senate Intelligence Committee's Russia investigation. They're at the part of their investigation now where they want to bring certain people back who were originally interviewed by staff on the committee to be questioned by senators on the committee who kind of want to take a crack at these guys. And so that's what's going on in their investigation. And Kushner was the person that they brought back that day for questioning. And yes, I ran after him with my colleague, and he did not say much.
Wait, so that's interesting. So when Republicans had power, just staff members were questioning these people, not actual senators? Or how did that work?
So it was different in the House and the Senate. On the Senate Intelligence Committee, all the interviews were done by the staff. And that is actually seen as kind of a pretty smart move because the staff are the ones who are working on the investigation all the time. Mm-hmm. They have all the knowledge inside their heads. They don't need to be briefed all the time like the senators do. And so they might be more effective at questioning. It's also made that committee's job of keeping things under wraps and preventing leaks a lot easier because you don't have lawmakers then leaving the room and talking to the press about what had just gone on inside the interview room. And so it's worked well for them. And now they're at this point in the Senate where they are, like I said, bringing people back to do interviews with senators. And these are the more high, not, I mean, they've interviewed hundreds and hundreds of people. Yeah. They're not going to bring all of them back. These are the high profile people like Kushner. On the House Intelligence Committee, last Congress, when Republicans were in charge, it was the members of the committee, so the congressmen and women who were doing the questioning. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the House Intelligence Committee was a fair bit leakier than the Senate Intelligence Committee. We got a lot of news out of them, and there was a lot of dysfunction, quite frankly, with that committee. This year, this session of Congress, they have moved to a more staff-focused interview process, but the members themselves are still in the room and can ask questions as kind of add-ons, but they aren't leading the questioning in the way that they were during the last Congress.
That's really interesting.
We talked a little about this last time, and I want to sort of like highlight for a second the stuff that we already know is true that has been revealed by the investigation that will remain true regardless of when the report comes out and what happens in it. We talked a little bit about what it's revealed specifically in terms of how wealth and power operate in America and how wealthy people, particularly in Washington, D.C., and this specific type of corruption that's essentially been normalized and allowed in D.C. for a long time. And the investigation has revealed that. Unfortunately, we needed a special counsel investigation to do it, but somebody like Manafort, for example, who rose to the position of being the eventual president of the United States' campaign chairman, the guy was for years acting as an illegal agent of a foreign entity, and he was illegally laundering money, stealing money, using it to buy antique rugs and ostrich jackets and stuff like that. And this was essentially normalized and accepted, and nobody questioned it and enforced these laws until Robert Mueller came along. And this is the kind of thing that Mueller's investigation revealed happened a lot before he came along and exposed it. And we talked a little about this last time about how there's this law in particular, Foreign Agents Registration Act, that essentially kind of just went like unenforced until Mueller came along and decided like, well, I'm going to enforce this.
Right. So this has been a very interesting and fascinating consequence of the Mueller investigation is this renewed spotlight on this old law called, like you said, the Foreign Agents Registration Act, or FARA, and because Mueller has used it in a lot of his prosecutions. This is, you know, this dates back to like the 1930s. It was enacted to prevent Nazi propaganda, and hasn't really been updated a ton throughout the years. And it's enforced by the DOJ, the Department of Justice, within the National Security Division. But in the last few decades, they really took a lax stance on enforcement. And it was basically more of a disclosure, like a voluntary disclosure law. You know, the number of prosecutions was extremely slim over the past few decades. And then there were two things that happened. There was Mueller, who came along and started charging people for FARA violations, but there was also an Inspector General's report that came out in 2016 about FARA enforcement at the DOJ that was fairly critical. And so you have this confluence of events. So you've got that report, you've got Mueller shedding all this new attention on it. And so people in D.C. have taken note of this. You know, FARA registrations have gone up significantly. You know, people are concerned about how this is going to shake out. There is word that Congress might pass a revised version of the bill to update it and, you know, kind of renew the law. And so this has been a very interesting consequence of this very high-profile investigation.
It's just crazy. It also exposes the degree to which like this justice system works, because Manafort was essentially getting away with doing these incredibly flashy and fairly obviously illegal things when you look back on them with the hindsight of Robert Mueller investigating him. When you look back, you're like, well, this guy was stashing all this money offshore and he was using it to buy ostentatious things. And the idea that he could do that and just completely avoid accountability whatsoever, like he was just stealing all this money and then, you know, using it, funneling it through all of these things, like the ostrich jacket, which is the most famous example, which, first of all, it's like if somebody buys an ostrich jacket, you should just be suspicious. You should just think that they're probably doing something illegal.
Isn't that uncomfortable? I just feel like it's not comfortable.
I don't know how ostrich feels, actually.
I feel like it would be very sweaty.
Yeah, do you think so?
I don't know.
What does your reporting say about this?
Yes, yeah.
Well, I've never personally tried on an ostrich jacket because I do not, as a reporter, have that kind of wealth.
Sure. What? are you talking about? I thought reporters made billions of dollars. Yeah.
Famously.
But as someone who has worn jackets before, I can say that one covered in ostrich feathers would probably be quite warm.
Oh, interesting. There and so go. That's what it would be for? Like, it would be for cold. It's a cold weather. It's not like a, so you know, like a spring jacket, like a light spring jacket would be sort of like breathable and that kind of thing. Would an ostrich jacket be like a heavy winter jacket?
Or is it like a night out jacket? Is it like you wear it to like some...
I mean, let's think about ostriches. They don't live in the Arctic.
Yeah.
They're kind of like warm climate bird things. And so...
Yeah, they are like bird things. I mean,
they're like these weird long-legged
birds. One thing
birds.
We can know for sure, regardless of what happens between now and the podcast comes out, is that ostriches
are not gonna change.
Warm bird things. Yeah. They're definitely...
They have parts of them that are birdy and other parts that
seem like
bird-like.
They don't fly.
Yeah,
so exactly. They are definitely...
It's totally true, because there's part of them that's just thing. Like, there's part of them that's bird, and then there's part that's just thing.
Just like legs.
Yeah, exactly.
Bird leg creatures. Yeah. But they don't live in the Arctic, right? So I'm guessing their feathers are not very insulating.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Actually, that is kind of like the best explanation of that. I think that's right. I think that's like a really good explanation. That helps me get a better sense of where Manafort was wearing
all of this is
going to
be moot when the Mueller report comes out a week from now, and like an entire chapter is on the
ostrich. It's 100 pages.
Like the ostrich that they killed to make the jacket. Like,
the crimes. I mean, there is an interesting point to be made that Donald Trump was elected on this promise to drain the swamp. He did not like the fact that a special counsel was appointed to investigate his campaign and potential collusion. But one of the results of this very high-profile investigation is that the swamp, its very nature, you know, the influence of foreign money and U.S. politics has been exposed to a certain degree and is probably going to be better regulated going forward. And so... that's kind of, you know, draining the swamp a little bit.
Yes, it's totally true. If nothing else comes out of this, what you just said remains true and is a huge thing that it exposed. And it, in a way, it was a core theme. We obviously could, it was transparently a lie from Donald Trump that he was going to drain the swamp. But it's probably the most ironic thing about the investigation, which is that it exposed those things that Trump claimed he was going to expose.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's Republicans and Democrats who have been swept up in these new prosecutions. And so it's not just Republicans, it's not just Democrats. It's, you know, that culture that existed. And just to get a little background, you know, the Foreign Agents Registration Act, this is a law that requires people who are working for foreign entities, especially people who are working for foreign kind of political or government entities, to register with the foreign government if they're doing kind of lobbying activities. And so you had basically a bunch of people who were working for foreign entities, whether it's governments, political parties, trying to influence U.S. policy and influence, you know, how the U.S., you know, operates within the world and as a country without much oversight. And so that is going to change. I'm going to be watching this more carefully moving forward, because one of the prosecutors from Mueller's team, his name is Brandon Van Grack, he's actually now been moved from Mueller's team to the FARA unit at the DOJ.
Oh,
and he's now the new chief of the FARA unit. And basically, they've signaled that this is going to mean, you know, stricter enforcement. And there was a great roll call story that was put out, I believe, yesterday that mentioned that there are likely already kind of some investigations going on that we aren't aware of yet that kind of relate to all of this.
Where are the Mueller investigators going? Besides that guy. And it's so interesting. Like, of course, they're going to go on to more. They're going to continue to work in this field. But it's interesting to think in terms of what they will prosecute next in Washington.
I'm not sure. I think some of them might go back to the private practice where they were. Yeah. I know that Mueller, when he was making his team, brought people from the private practice where he was with him. So I'm guessing some of them will go back into private practice. Some, you know, whether it's spokesperson Peter Carr or others, will probably just go somewhere else in the DOJ. Yeah. I'm not sure exactly where they're all headed.
Will you guys still just like email Carr for fun, just to get a like, we're not commenting on this email back?
Yeah, I'll be like, him? How's the weather today? And he'll be like, we'll decline to comment.
There was some amazing story about like, I think it was during the Manafort trial, some of the prosecutors, I think, went to Shake Shack for a meal, and some reporter asked what they were getting at Shake Shack. And I think it was Peter Carr. It's like, we can't confirm or deny.
Yeah.
Or we can, I think it was like, we can confirm they went to Shake Shack. We will not tell you the order.
All right.
Last question I want to ask you, because I know we have to wrap up, but I am curious, as a reporter, were you surprised and impressed by how little or how few leaks there were from the Mueller team?
Completely, because it's been my experience reporting in the United States that you know, people tend to talk a lot here. Yeah. You know, it's you know, it's a little bit easier to develop sources. You just have so much amazing accessibility to lawmakers, to powerful people, you know, to really question them and hold them accountable. I am very impressed, for the most part, with Mueller's discipline of his team. That was not a leaky team. We were often taken off guard by his indictments and whatnot, and so I do think that was fairly impressive. And of course it made our jobs harder. You know, when people aren't talking about the thing that we're reporting on, of course it makes it a lot more challenging for us. And it was just obviously one of many challenges in reporting on this massive story. So it was tough.
Well, it was bold of you to make all those predictions that you made about the Mueller report. That will definitely
we will know whether by the time you listen to this, we will know whether or not you were right.
I just hope that the Mueller report has a picture of Dmitry Klokov, the Russian weightlifter, from his Instagram, maybe one of him just,
absolutely,
you know, lifting stuff up, looking buff.
He'll be in the movie version of this when it comes out anyway.
I hope so. His Instagram is a real trip.
I would love it if he's like the hero of the report. Like he comes out like in the report, he's like, he's the guy who was like, you know what, this is unethical. We shouldn't be doing this.
Come on, guys.
You're lying to the American people. Like, I'm a gold medal winner.
Ivanka, I wish I could be with you on this one. My integrity's on the line.
He just loves democracy secretly. And he's been hiding it all along.
Well, we're going to find out.
We're going to find out. So it's possible by the time listen to this, we'll know already.
Thank you for talking to us twice now.
Yes. You're welcome.
And then I guess at some point down the road, we'll just release the first time we talked to you as a boring digital exclusive.
That's a joke. I do still think everyone should live their lives, like I said the first time.
Yes, that was your motto last time. It remains your motto this time.
And drive safely over the next few days, because I feel like the report will come out while you're driving.
Yeah. Well, I'm in New York, so I don't have to drive. I don't have my car.
Okay, go get it in the back of an Uber.
Yeah, and then I can read and tweet all I want. Yeah.
That sounds great.
Great.
Thank you so much, Emma. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.